Is this on? Yes? You know, I think one of the most memorable holidays that me and Seth went had was we were in Bible college at the time. We were both studying, so we didn't have much money. We went to Port Stevens, and one of our friends, I think he had one of these, I think it's called timeshare, where you kind of have these points, and you can kind of, well, he basically purchased the holiday for us, which was really generous of him. And when we got to the hotel, I mean, normally you kind of expect a hotel to just be, you know, a room and a bathroom. This was like an apartment. It was huge. It had like two bedrooms. It had a full kitchen. It had this huge balcony. And one of the best things about our holidays was this shark farm. And they put you in a wetsuit. And you actually get to sit in the pool and feed the sharks. Now, I've actually got asthma, so I can't go scuba diving. So that literally is as close as it's going to be for me. And I loved it. It was just the best thing I could do. But, you know, there was one really bad thing at the holiday. The bathroom. The bathroom had, I don't know where the smell came from. I don't know if it came from the drain or from the toilet or from the shower, but we just knew it was bad. As if, like, no one had ever cleaned it at all. And so we closed that door, but then we also had to close the door, the room next to that as well, because the stench was just huge, and we just slept in the lounge room for the whole time. Whole holiday was great, except for the bathroom. You know, I want to say, when it comes to the gospel, I want to say everything, there's so many good things about the gospel. We can talk about God and how great he is. We can talk about how good he is. We can talk about how merciful and loving he is. But the stinkiest part of the gospel is sin. We know it's there. We don't want to open the door. You know, the church camp's coming up. We're going to talk about the gospel and work. I think that's a pretty good topic to talk about. You know, in some of our Bible studies, we've been talking about how does God guide? You know, God and guidance. Man, that's a topic worth talking about. We're going to talk about marriage in the seminars coming. That is worth talking about. You know, I've never heard a camp about sin. You know, we know it's true, but I'm not going to do 8 weeks on sin. Because the stinky room that no one really wants to go in. But in the passage that Alice just read, I'll read for us verse 22 and 23 from Romans 3. We're going to do a bit of Bible flipping. It says, there is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. Paul says, all have sinned and all are justified by Jesus. And he connects his two ideas of sin and Jesus' work together. And he does it quite often. In fact, the Bible, throughout the whole scriptures, does it quite often. So in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, Christ died for sins. 1 Peter 3:18, for Christ also suffered for sins. You know, it is that stinky room that you kind of want to close the door on, but God's to say, you know, if we want to understand the work of Jesus fully, then you and I have to very, very clear understanding of what sin is. Jesus died for sins. You know, if you are new or visiting tonight, it's never an easy task coming to church, I think, especially if you don't know people. So I want to thank you for coming. And you kind of come on a pretty awkward night, I think. You know, of all the nights we kind of talk about pretty good things, this one's going to be a bit stinky. But I hope that you kind of come with us to the journey and learn a bit about what the Bible says about sin. You might even be a bit offended. But the big question to think about is it true? Is it true? If this is the first time you heard about this word, this is a big question to think about. Is it true? Does it explain the way things are? Well, what is sin? We're going to think about that. Come with me to 1 John 3. 1 John 3, it's just one verse. 1 John 3, verse 4. As I mentioned, we're going to do a bit of Bible flipping. So maybe if the person next to you, if you find that they're kind of struggling a bit, maybe you just want to give them a brief hand that will help them. 1 John 3, verse 4. There's a very clear definition of what sin is. Everyone who sins breaks the law. In fact, sin is lawlessness. Well, the question is, what is sin? Very clear answer, sin is breaking the law of God. Breaking God's law is disobeying or going against the laws that God has set for how we should live in this world. In other words, there are moral standards that God has set for how you and I should live. And he kind of does say, you might know some of these things, do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not lie. There is right and wrong in this world. And it's not as though every person can decide in their own mind for themselves what is right and wrong. Because, well, he is the creator. I am the creation. He is God, and we're just humans. He is infinite, and we are finite. And so it is kind of right that he has that right to rule in that way. He decides what is good and bad, what is right and wrong. And it is wrong when we decide that is right to break the laws that he has set. So that's what sin is. Sin is breaking the law. Why is it such a big deal? Why does the Bible make such a big deal about breaking the law of God? You know who I think makes too big a deal about the law? Traffic wardens. Oh my gosh. Seriously, I think they need to lighten up just a little bit. I mean, I don't understand why they have to be so strict about something. So hung about 5 minutes late. 5 minutes, you're 5 minutes late and he's already there writing the ticket. It's like, what are you doing? You're stalking me or something. And you know, he's not going to negotiate with you. 5 minutes, 2 hour zone, you're late. You got to pay a fine. See, sometimes when I read that sin is about breaking the law of God, I think, why so serious? It's like God is the mother of all traffic wardens, and he's watching your every move, every decision, every thought, every deed, and he's waiting for you to break the law. That's almost like, the police with the speed camera in the car behind the bushes. And as soon as he sees you pass by, he comes out, got you. I think God needs to lighten up a bit. Let me tell you why it is such a big deal. Why is breaking the law such a big deal? Why is sin such a big deal? See, when we look at the laws that God has given us about how to live in this world, laws given from the creator to the creation, they're not random laws. They're not random traps that God puts up and he waits to bust you. Every law tells us something about what God values. When God says, don't lie, it is because I value honesty and integrity. And I want you to value honesty and integrity. When God says, don't commit adultery, it's because I value marriage. And I want you to value marriage. So you know what? Love your wife. And respect that lady belongs to another man. So don't commit adultery. When he says, don't steal, it's because I value the fact that we each have our own belongings. And I want you to value that what you want, that is not yours to take. See, when we see that beneath the laws of God is something, it tells us something about who God is, about his character, and what he values, and what he is concerned about, we can begin to see why sin is such a big deal. Because when we break his laws, we decide, I value something you do not. I will value what I want to value, not what you want to value. See, it's not just about being disobedient. it's not just about right and wrong. It's more than just a law. It is actually a rejection of who God is. It is a denial of everything God stands for. You do not rule. I will choose what I want to value. If I want that man's wife, I will so choose. And so we reject God by breaking his laws. And it means that in our hearts, we are against God. And we are God's enemies. Because sin is a failure to love God himself. I don't know, I mean, is that a fair description? I imagine. And maybe those of you who are new visiting, the mere idea that someone could come to you and say, you know what, you are a sinner and an enemy of God. Gosh, that's... I imagine not many people would appreciate you saying that. Hey, is that a fair description of people in Sydney today? If I think through my neighbours, they're pretty kind people. They help me and Seth out when we need help. They're very polite. They're very kind. I imagine most of us here probably don't have a criminal record. We're pretty good, decent people. I'm not so sure. Sinner and enemy of God. That's a pretty strong description. You know, I'm only 3 months as a father. But I think even 3 months, I kind of do wonder what Toby's life will be like. And I thought of the worst case scenario. Let me tell you the worst case scenario. Your child is born. Very exciting. You're prepared. You know, you've bought bottles, you've bought clothes, you've bought nappies, you've had a baby shower, you've got a cot, you've got a stroller. He's born. You feed him. You have tireless nights where you are trying to look after him. Every time he cries, you wake up. You cuddle him back to sleep. Every time he wheezes and poos, you change his nappy. But not once does your child ever look at you in the eyes. Not once does he ever smile back at you. You continue to care for him. You feed him. He grows, but it never seems to change. Every time you hug him, he looks away. Never says, "I love you, Mummy." He just takes and takes and takes, and you give and you give and you give. Never a word. Never a glance. When he gets to school, he does very well. His friends love him. He gets good grades. His teachers think, your son's really good. He's very bright. He's good at music. Very generous to people as well. And he comes home and he cleans his room. He does his homework. He eats his vegetables. But he still never ever says a word to you. Not once, even a glance. Not once a thank you. He grows into an adult. People love him. He's an upstanding citizen. No criminal record. And as soon as he is able to, packs up all his things, leaves home, does not say goodbye, and never, ever comes back. What would you think of that kind of a child? Tell you what I would think. That's a monster. Not a word, not a smile. Takes and takes, and you give and you give. Let me read to you something from Romans 1. Romans 1:20, I'll read it for you. This is what Paul says in Romans 1. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him. Is that not the picture of people in Sydney? We live in a fantastic city. We have beaches and glorious food. Just for a second, I mean, I like McDonald's. I know some of you don't like McDonald's. But just consider this moment. I can drive down the road and I can eat food that is made of bread and vegetables and meat, a bit at least, cheese, sauce. If you lived in the Middle Ages to get something like that, you had to be a king. An animal had to be slaughtered for that. Produce would have to be brought from the fields. I can get it in 30 seconds. And the average person in Sydney goes to sleep and says, I owe God nothing. That is a monster of a city. If Toby was like, that would be a nightmare of a child. And God says, that is a nightmare of a creation. That is sin. And when we realize just how deep sin is, it's not just about breaking the rules, but an actual rejection of God himself. Man, there are so many sinful views of sin. I know I do speak about this quite often. But religion is one of the most sinful ways of looking at sin. What do I mean by what religion? Well, religion is about, as long as I check those boxes, as long as I make it to church, God will be happy with me. And I feel good about myself. As long as I read the Bible, I feel good about myself. Because that's what God says, you've got to be a good Christian. And it's just about trying to hit these behavioral markers. And as long as I hit those behavioral markers, it's all good. And so I come to church because I think that's what a good Christian should do. Bad Christians don't go to church. And so the measure of my worth is actually about the performance I have in life. Religion is insulting to who God is. To think that as long as I behave properly, he will be pleased with me. You know, this whole idea of sinful use of sin, it was actually one of the issues that Jesus took up with his people when he was in his earthly ministry. Come look in Matthew 5. This one's really going to rattle some chains. Matthew 5. And I'll read from verse 21. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Rakah, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Man. That's heavy. Last week, probably read in the news. Had a guy called Elliot Rogers. Went on a killing spree. You know, he killed three people in his apartment, and then he just went on a killing spree, like drive-by shooting. Seven people died on that day. It's crazy. It's an understatement to say murder is pretty bad, isn't it? Taking the life of someone else. It's so unquestionably wrong that I can't think of anyone who would disagree with that. And Jesus taps into this. He says, you know, look, I know that you heard it said, do not murder, and anyone who takes the life of another will be subject to judgment. And I agree with that. I nod in that. Yeah. If you murder someone, you need to do the time for that. Jesus takes it a step further. He says, but you know, I tell you, anyone who's angry with a brother or sister, anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Oh man, I don't like the sound of that. He's saying, you know, when you take your hatred on someone and you rip them to shreds with your words because you're angry, he says, look, it's not murder, but it comes from the same place. It's the same place. I cannot count the amount of times I have called someone a tool or a moron because I'm angry at them. Man, to be honest, I've used a lot of colorful words when I don't like people. I feel uncomfortable reading this. And if I find myself asking this question, could it be possible that I actually don't know just how far sin goes? See, Jesus, the sinful view of sin is this. You've got the full-on, super bad sins like murder and adultery and theft. I mean, those are clearly bad. And we all go, yeah, that's terrible. You shouldn't do that. Then you've got these other ones, which you kind of put in, we kind of put in the naughty basket. And we kind of joke around awkwardly if we see people do them. I mean, they're not great things to do. I mean, I'm not going to encourage you to say bad things about people. But, I mean, it's not in the super bad basket. It's in the naughty basket. And I wonder if one of the reasons why I feel so comfortable talking about sin is because I actually don't think I've done things that are that bad. Let me rephrase Jesus' words here. I'll give it a contemporary spin on it. You have heard it said that sneaking into a movie without buying a ticket is wrong. But I tell you, anyone who streams a movie illegally is in danger of the fire of hell. Whoa, I don't like where that's going. You have heard it said that adultery and sexual immorality is wrong. But I tell you, if you are acting inappropriately with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you're in danger of the fire of hell. You have heard it said that lying is wrong. But I tell you, if you claim more on your tax than you should be, danger of the fire of hell. I'm not sure I like where that's going. And if you're anything like me, I try and justify it. The police aren't going to bust you if you download a movie. No one's going to get hurt. But he is a tool. Did you hear what he said? It's not like the law doesn't let me claim that much. I know I don't have all the receipts, and they're not all mine. Have you seen how much tax is these days? Don't worry. It's not like me and my girlfriend are sleeping together. How far does sin go? Maybe a lot further than I realize. And that really bothers me. Come with me to Psalm 51. Psalm 51, and I read from verse 3. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. So you are right in your verdict and justified when you judge. Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Since the moment Toby was born, everyone keeps asking us this question. Me and Seth asked each other this question. Who does he look like? And I think we've kind of got it worked out at 3 months. His facial features come from mum. So he's got mum's lips and mum's eyes and mum's nose and her ears. But Toby has my facial expressions. So when he gets really angry, that's when people go, whoa, he looks like you. When he gets angry, he looks like you. There's something else he has that me and Seth also have. A heart of sinfulness. I know we like to look at babes if they're innocent people. And they're kind of cute and cuddly. And they are. David says, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. That's crazy. What? The only thing I've ever seen him do is poo, wee, fart, eat, sleep, and cry. But he's also sinful. Sometimes we kind of think, well, it's when you do the sinful things, well, that's when you become sinful. Murderers are more sinful than I am because I've done more bad things than I have. All I've done is just downloaded stuff. It's not that the more you sin, the more sinful you become. It's we are already sinful. And we just do sinful things. I'm not sure if I know just how far sin goes. Our last passage, Romans 5, will come on the screen. You can read it with me. Paul writes, you see at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Since we have now been justified by his blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through him? For if, while we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his Son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? You and I know Jesus died. The people that Paul wrote to, they knew it too. But Paul wants them to know, don't just think about that he died. Think about when. Think about when. He says three times. The first time he says, when we were still powerless. The second time he says, while we were still sinners. And the third time he says, while we were God's enemies. If you and I want to know just how far sin goes, just how serious it is, look no further than the death of Christ. He died for people who download movies. He died for people who don't do their taxes honestly. He died for people who may have never ever had sex before, but they really pushed that boundary with their boyfriend or girlfriend. That's crazy, isn't it? But isn't that the reality? Otherwise, or is it just Jesus died for the murderers and the adulterers and the people that rob banks? God thinks of it as serious business. That he would take the life of his Son for our sake. One of the things I've learned just in the 3 months of being a father is this. So many of you guys I consider friends. And there is not a chance in the world I'll let Toby die for any of you. And you are my friends. God says, I will let my Son go that far for enemies. I don't know how that works. As much as I don't know just how far sin goes, I don't know just how far the love of God goes. If you want to see how serious God thinks of sin, look no further than the cross. If you want to see just how far he wants to pursue you, look no further than the cross. I think Paul is right. Jesus died for sins. And when you get just how far sin goes, truly, God is great. Where do we end off from here? I could end off with, stop doing the bad things you're doing. Could end off with, you should walk away feeling embarrassed. I think sometimes we do that when we read the Bible, we apply it, and we for some reason we think we've got to feel guilty about things and feel shameful about these things. I tell you what, if Christ died for enemies and he tells you, I have forgiven you, I have reconciled you, then you and I are free to come to Jesus. Exploring the depth of just how far sin goes. Because I know he has pursued me that far. I am liberated to be honest with just how far it seeps. And be so confident of the love of the Father. And he does invite us to do that. Because that is the God he is. Yes, sin is breaking the law. Yes, it is undermining God and being his enemy. Yes, it stains so far into who we are, even at birth, that we are his enemies. And God says, even still, I pursue you to the ends of the earth, that I'll give the life of my Son, so that you might know you truly are forgiven, and so we are free to come before him, admitting everything about just how far it goes. Amen.
Thanks for preaching, Simon. Well, that was a pretty sobering talk, wasn't it? A lot of serious hard truths there, but I think just as Simon structured his sermon to end on a happy note, that really is really the shape of the gospel, which is what we believe, that that the ugly truths of our lives ends on a happy note because of what Jesus has done. So what we're going to do now is actually we're going to go to a time of prayer in response. That's what we do every week. But I think I just want to say, if you're not too familiar with Christianity, or you're a visitor or something, if you've got questions or follow-up on that and you want to find out more, or even if you just want to rage and object or something like that, please go ahead and use those response forms, because we really do want to engage. Want you to engage with the word that is preached. But we've got some prayer points up here. You can have a look at that. And what we're going to do now is just break off into groups of about 3 to 4, maybe 5, and just pray together. Here are some suggestions of what you can pray about. And just after a few minutes, I think Simon will come and close. And if you see someone who's a bit lost, please go ahead and join them and guide them along.